Welcome to a new series of six very personal stories about people in their 30s, 20s and teens living in Ireland. While each person has a very different story to tell, they have one thing in common. They all use a wheelchair to get around. But these are not stories about disability as we know it. These are stories from a new generation about human wrongs and human rights, about power and pride, and the love to be found in Ireland's invisible ghetto. Imagine for a moment if you couldn't be part of society the same as everyone else. If schools, colleges and workplaces were out of bounds. If buses didn't stop for you and trains left you on the platform. What if your local gym, restaurant or cinema turned you away? Or worse, what if you needed medical treatment and there was no service available for your condition? This is the day-to-day reality of life for wheelchair users in Ireland. For the next half an hour, and whenever you listen to the other five stories in the series, you're invited to leave any assumptions you may have about disability behind and enter the world of six young people who know what it means to always be the last one on the train. Episode 1, Lisa.
Disability pride and power! Disability pride and power!
What do we want?
Human rights!
When do we want them?
Now!
What do we want?
It's the 22nd of July 2023, a wet summer afternoon in the centre of Dublin. Tourists and shoppers duck out of the way as a large group of colourful young people make their way along Nassau Street towards government buildings. There's an atmosphere of celebration. This is Ireland's first ever Disability Pride Parade.
Nothing about us without us!
Disability Pride is a global movement which celebrates disabled people as positive contributors to society. At government buildings, a young woman wearing a Disability Pride t-shirt drives her red electric wheelchair through the crowd to the podium where she's being introduced.
So our next speaker is Lisa Flynn.
So my name is Lisa Flynn. I'm a disability advocate. And as of this autumn when I graduate, I'll be the first wheelchair user in Ireland to qualify as a primary school teacher. Thank you.
4 months later, and 200 kilometres northwest of government buildings, we're at a house in a small town in the rugged countryside of County Leitrim. This is home to the young teacher who spoke at Ireland's first Disability Pride event.
So my name is Lisa Flynn. I'm 26. I'm from Manor Hamilton in County Leitrim and I live with my parents.
Sitting by the fire in her family home, Lisa tells her personal story.
So I was born with a disability called spina bifida. In medical speak, that would be known as a neurological tube defect. And what that means in normal speak for the rest of us is basically that when mum was pregnant with me, one of the nerves in my spine was severed, which basically means that the message from my brain to my legs to work doesn't go through properly. That's how I always explain it to people. So there are so many levels to spina bifida. There's so many different types of spina bifida. I'm, well, quote unquote, lucky that my level of spina bifida is relatively mild. I have feeling in my legs, I use a wheelchair for longer distances and I use my walking frame for my internal environments or shorter distances.
Incredibly, in 2023, Lisa made history by becoming the first wheelchair user to qualify as a primary school teacher in Ireland.
So I'm a recently qualified primary school teacher and on the side I am a disability advocate as well. I love the work that I do. I love working with children. I love educating people about disability. I think that's one of the most empowering things that I do in life, and it's definitely something that brings me the most joy.
Lisa's professional achievements are remarkable, especially given that Ireland has the worst rate of employment for disabled people in the EU. But perhaps even more impressive, she has come to accept and embrace her disability, despite the ableism she meets every day.
When I was younger, I used to daydream of what I'd look like if I didn't have a mobility aid, if I could walk around. And it made me very angry when I was a kid that that wasn't real. And I hated my body and I hated everything to do with it. Now, as an adult, I can certainly say, yes, I would choose the body that I have, which is a very emotional roller coaster of a journey that I've been on to get to this point. But yes, I would, because if I didn't have the body that I have, if I wasn't born with spina bifida, I'm not fully sure I'd have all of the characteristics that I have of empathy and compassion that I do have now because of my disability. There are a plethora of people that I would never have met if I didn't have the body I have now. There are a plethora of opportunities I wouldn't have had if I didn't have the body that I have. And I'm grateful for that body, which is something that I never would have thought I would have said when I was younger. But now I would choose the body that I have because it makes me who I am. It's not all of me. My disability isn't all of me, but it's a part of me that I need to nurture and I need to respect. And it's something that I'm proud of now.
It's the night before Lisa graduates from her Masters of Education in Primary School Teaching. Her parents and herself have travelled from Leitrim to Maynooth for the occasion.
So we're in the Glen Royal Hotel in Maynooth. We're going up on the lift now to the first floor to our room, and I'm going to show you everything that's set up for the day tomorrow. So yeah, very excited now. It's starting to feel very real, I think, that that it's actually tomorrow. Mind that I don't crash into something going out of the lift backwards. From a very young age, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. It was just something that was in me. It just came naturally to me. I feel like teaching as a profession can be quite stressful, and I think that it is a vocation and you need to be the right kind of person for it. But I just felt like it was always without a doubt what I wanted to do. Like, everyone in my family knew it, like, oh, Lisa wants to be a teacher. And it's just one of those things that stuck with me. I know some people want to be all sorts of things when they're younger and they grow out of it, but no matter what phase I went through, it's always teaching. It always came back to teaching. So throughout my life, it was never a doubt in my mind that I would be able to do it. I never thought that there would be obstacles in the way of that. Again, obviously moving forward then, there were certain curveballs when I began the course, but they were certainly unforeseen. It never dawned on me that I wouldn't be able to. Here we go. So this is my dress here. So it's purple. Purple's my favourite colour. I've got a little sparkle there in the middle, and I've got my little jacket, because you can never tell what the weather's going to do this time of year, so I have a little furry pink jacket over it as well.
So tell us about the cap and gown.
Yeah, so we have our cap and gown here. I just collected it there a couple of minutes ago, so I've got my little hat. Then I have my gown here and my little piece that goes around. So it's green. And with a gold trimming on it, and this is my little gown. So yeah, I'm quite short, so I chose the 5 foot and under option. So I'll probably still be swimming on me, but sure, look, it's grand. So that's me now in the morning over my dress. Very excited altogether.
How does Lisa feel that in all likelihood, she's the first wheelchair user to graduate as a primary school teacher in Ireland?
It's crazy to me. I don't think that's ever going to feel real. When I was in first semester of the PME here in Maynooth, one of my lecturers just kind of passively said to me, oh yeah, we're being guided by you because you're actually the first wheelchair user to do this in Maynooth. And I was like, whoa, like, I'd never even considered that. And I was like, that's really cool. as the course continued, obviously there's a lot of placements and Gaeltacht placements and things like that, and from talking to people on a more national level in those institutions, it became clear that the whole course in any institution had never been looked at through a wheelchair user lens before. And that's kind of why I'm also quite reluctant to say I'm the first person to do it nationally, because I'm so afraid someday someone's gonna be like, actually no, I am. But like, as far as I know, and everyone I've worked with has known, and anyone in any of the institutions I've worked in has known, I am the first.
While there is no doubt that this is a fantastic achievement for Lisa, it's worth taking a moment to ask why Ireland is so far behind the curve on this. The first wheelchair user to become a teacher in the US was a woman by the name of Judith Heumann, who started teaching in 1970. That's over 50 years ago. Heumann, who went on to become a leader in the American disability civil rights movement, experienced ableism in a most brutal way in 1950s Brooklyn, when at 5 years of age, she was denied the right to attend school because of her disability. Exactly 50 years later, in 2002, on the other side of the Atlantic, 5-year-old Lisa had a more gentle awakening to her disability.
I distinctly remember the first time when I realised I was in a wheelchair, that I had a disability, basically that I was different. I was in junior infants, so I was 5. And at the time, the way the class was constructed was that, like, if you had your work done, you would line up at the teacher's desk to get your work corrected. At the time, I hadn't been given a walker yet. I wasn't given a walker till I was 8. So I was in a wheelchair, but because what I was used to at home was I'd just crawl around if I was playing and stuff, and obviously I was only in junior infants. So my automatic reaction when I had to get from A to B within the classroom would be to crawl around, which is fine because I was five. But I can remember lining up to get my work corrected at the teacher's desk, and everyone else was obviously standing in a row, and I was kneeling, and I was in the middle of the row, so there was people in front of me standing and people behind me standing. And I remember it. I can see it in my mind's eye. I remember looking around and thinking, why am I down here and they're up there? And up until that point, it had never dawned on me. I was like, that's weird. Like, I'm down on the floor and they're up there. Why is that? And that, for me, was the point when I realised I was different. And I was only five, so it's 21 years ago now.
Back in the hotel lobby, Lisa explains that she will do a run-through with a member of staff at the university before the graduation ceremony the following morning. She's reluctant to leave the matter of wheelchair access to chance. She recalls her first graduation 4 years earlier.
Traditionally, pre-pandemic times, all of the graduations took part on the South Campus, which is the older campus, and that was definitely a hurdle to overcome because the hall in which the conferrings take place back then wasn't accessible, and they had to kind of get a lift kind of put in for me to sit into, or to stand into my walker, and it wasn't very smooth, you know. It was kind of like, and Lisa Flynn, and then 10 minutes later Lisa rides on the stage, you know. But this time now there's a more modern lecture theatre, and I've been assured that there's no steps and things like that. Obviously the run through will tell the real story of how it's going to run for me, but it appears to be a lot more modern and a lot more accessible and a lot more equal, so, which is what it should be.
Wheelchair access is hit and miss in Ireland at best. Inaccessible buildings can exclude wheelchair users from normal areas of life like work and education altogether. And poor standards of access can be humiliating.
Say if I was entering a building and it had steps, they would bring me around the back or bring me around a back entrance and try and let me in that way. And I mean, they say that they're accessible because of that, but it's like the alternative route, whereas they should just have a ramp and not have steps in the first place. I know that used to bug me an awful lot when I was younger, that my friends would go in places differently to me, and I just felt like it made me stand out so unnecessarily.
Lisa vividly remembers one particular incident.
At one point when I was in college, we had a sudden room change. We couldn't use the lecture theatre that we were supposed to be using, and it was in a much older building, and it was entirely steps. And I remember between my PA and one of the lads in my chorus, they had to carry me up, and at the time it was all like fun and like, oh, look at us, like carrying Lisa, like, and it was a bit of crack, but it mortified me. And yeah, it was good crack at the time, but I think afterwards I was like, oh my god, like, that's so embarrassing. And I think that is something that kind of stayed with me. I don't think that's ever anything that gets ever easier, you know. It's always going to be that little kind of ugh moment, you know, like, why couldn't the building just have been accessible, like, why, do you know?
It's the morning of the graduation. The lobby of the new Technology, Society and Innovation building on the North Campus of Maynooth University is buzzing with graduates, their families and university staff.
My name is Orla and I'm the conferring officer in Maynooth.
So what does your job entail?
Making sure everything runs smoothly for everyone and that the graduates have a great day and that their guests do too.
And with Lisa coming in today, was there additional work for you to do around that?
No, the building that we have is quite accessible. It's easy just to meet them 15 minutes before registration and walk them through it, and they're happy, you know.
It's gas, isn't it, how the built environment can really enable people to be equal to everybody else?
Yeah, and that's what we want on their graduation day, because it's such a huge day for every student. And you want everyone to take part in it like everyone else.
Lisa and her parents arrive.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm Orla.
Nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too. And these are your...
This is my dad, Tommy, and my mum, Patsy.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi,
Patsy. Lovely to meet you. How are you today? Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So are we going to just do a run through now?
Yeah, just do a little run through so you're comfortable and you know
perfect,
what's happening.
Because I will be transitioning from the chair to the walker.
The team at Maynooth are on the ball today. Not only are there no physical barriers in the new building, but the staff are well informed. This is unusual. Often, there's a huge lack of disability knowledge and awareness among the general non-disabled community, which can be really undermining for disabled people.
I don't want to use the word ignorance, and I don't mean it in a derogatory way, but it's kind of the passive ignorance of people, fully grown adults, towards disability. Like, they feel like they have a right to your medical history just because you're in a wheelchair. Like, they would literally come up to me, or they'd come up to my parents, should I say, and say, what's wrong with her? Why is she in that? And if you're like 10, and you're a little girl wanting to be dressing up in your little Barbie outfits and having the time of your life of a Saturday, you don't want somebody to be saying, what's wrong with you? Like, even that whole statement, wrong. You know, what's wrong with her? So number one, they weren't speaking to me. And number two, they were saying that there was something wrong with me. That is something that really happened a lot. There would be people who would come up to me on the street and be like, oh, can you do X, Y, and Z on your own? Can you go to the toilet on your own? Can you do whatever? And I don't know these people. And again, even more hurtful when they don't even say it to me, they say it to my parents. So there was a lot of like passive ignorance around that. The other thing that really used to annoy me was the whole sob story element. Like, oh, you poor wee thing. Oh, it's awful sad. Or you're very young to be in a wheelchair. All these things that are so negative. And at the end of the day, what did they expect me to take from that? Say, oh yeah, my life's tragic. My life's so sad. No, it's not. And I know that now. But I think growing up, I kind of adopted that attitude because I was so young. Children are so impressionable. And I just automatically thought, oh, well, if they're saying my disability is a sob story, then it must be a sob story. And yeah, I think more so than the direct mean comments, because people always say, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me, you know, talking about schoolyard bullying. But I think when you get that kind of people trying to be nice and then it coming out so rudely thing, when you know that there's probably good intentions there, that can be the worst part, because then you adopt that attitude yourself. And believe you me, when it's the little voice in your head telling you that something's wrong with you, or that, you know, your life's a sob story, that your life is tragic because you're in a wheelchair or because you're in a walker, that little voice in your head is so much more difficult to turn off than if it was just some schoolyard bully.
With the run-through complete, there's just time for a few photos outside before the ceremony begins.
You're going to get you by yourself, Lisa, first, and then you with your parents.
Absolutely,
brother.
Yeah, no worries at all. So there's one of me and then one with you guys, is that okay?
As a young teenager, Lisa internalised the ableism she encountered. This made life very difficult for her for a number of years.
I had an awful lot of resentment towards my disability and an awful lot of resentment towards my mobility aids specifically. If photos were taken of me with my friends, even if we were getting ready to go somewhere, we're getting all dressed up and, you know, photos would be taken in the house, I would either stand up against the wall and have the walker taken away, or I would stand out of the walker beside my friend and have them have their arm around me when really they were actually holding me up. Or I'd purposely be sitting down with my friends. I would not have any wheelchair or walker even heard of being in the photograph. Even though the furthest it was probably going was Facebook, and I was friends with everybody on Facebook that I knew, so everyone knew that I had a mobility aid. I don't know who I was fooling, only myself. But over the course of those, what was that, 7 years or so, I had begun a very toxic relationship with my disability, I would describe it as. Just desperately trying to have something other than my physical body being noticed was a big thing. Probably had an element of killing people with kindness as well, wanting to be the best friend, wanting to be known as somebody's best friend so that I could be seen as that and that I wasn't just the one in the wheelchair. I think the one in the wheelchair was a phrase I used an awful lot in my head because I felt like that's what I was. I definitely felt like I had to make up for that. And I don't want to give a really dark depiction of disability in saying that, because I've come on in leaps and bounds, and that's what my story and what my journey is about, is how I've come on now as an adult. But thinking back on that time, it was mentally draining and exhausting having to pretend all the time to be the funny one, or, you know, to just compensate all the time.
That's great. Sorry, just going a little closer, good man. That's it, perfect. Okay, guys. Big smile, Lisa. That's cool, perfect.
Lisa no longer works hard to compensate for her disability. As she moved from her teens to adulthood, she stopped hiding her disability in the photographs she posted online, including the ones she posted on dating apps.
I know in your 20s, you know, you've got like your social media and your dating apps that everyone's on, and I've had successful relationships from those two. But I do find that the initial stage where somebody's swiping left or right and they just see a photo, I used to make the mistake of just having selfies on those kind of things, and like everyone would just see my face so that they could judge, like they would judge anybody. But then I made the decision, which I thought was my brave decision, of putting myself in my wheelchair in the first photo, so that's what they see. And then in my mind, I'm like, I don't care who says no to me, because I don't want to talk to somebody if they don't want to talk to me if I'm in a wheelchair, you know, because that is part of me. And that wasn't a decision I took lightly. So in that way, I suppose I feel empowered by doing that. And yeah, that's kind of been my approach, and it works.
Back inside, Lisa heads off with the other graduates, while her parents wait to go into the auditorium. More than anyone else, they know what she has overcome to get to this point.
I am very happy and extremely proud.
Well, you've been here before.
Yes. But this is the ultimate, really, isn't it? You know, this is the one, you know. Thrilled. We're all thrilled and so proud.
And how are you feeling this morning?
Oh, I'm feeling wonderful, very happy, very relieved we're here now and ready to go. It's all good.
But it wasn't always good. Nor was it clear that Lisa would make it this far. Teacher training in Ireland has not been designed with physically disabled students in mind. A major obstacle for Lisa was the Gaeltacht element of the course.
So the discussion came up around me attending the Gaeltacht. And obviously, and not to stereotype, Gaeltachts are very rural areas. You know, they are in the middle of nowhere oftentimes, in beautiful parts of the country, but not ideal for somebody with a mobility aid. So the discussion around how I was going to be able to attend the Gaeltacht kind of commenced, so to speak. And I was in talks with Maynooth, I was in contact with the Teaching Council, with the Department of Education, and no one kind of seemed to know how to go about it. And I certainly, for one, didn't know how to go about it. So obviously, as you know, when you go to the Gaeltacht, you stay in the Banlan Cheese House, the person who hosts you, for 2 weeks. So it's one thing being able to get into a school, but trying to get into somebody's personal house when you have a mobility aid often isn't the most accessible environment. So they thought that they had found me this Banlan Cheese House that had a ramp up to it, and they said this was super promising, bearing in mind this was a couple of weeks before the Gaeltacht was set to commence. And so, not wanting to leave things to chance, my dad and I travelled up to this Gaeltacht area, travelled to the Banlan Cheese House in order to test it out. And sure enough, they did have a ramp and they were super accommodating to as much as they could. When I got to their front door, there was a lip up on the door frame and not a hope of my wheelchair get in there. So that was another example of, like, you know, there not being enough education around accessible accommodations for wheelchairs, because yes, they had the ramp, so from a non-disabled perspective, it looked super accessible. But when you're actually the wheelchair user, you realise there's a lip up there. Like, I knew before I even tried it, I saw it, and I was like, I'm not going to get my chair up on that.
It turned out that there was no accessible teacher training Gaeltacht anywhere in the country for Lisa to attend. With time running out and stress running high, it was decided that Lisa would attend the Gaeltacht virtually.
To be honest with you, at the time, myself and my family were so relieved that this solution had been found, because it had been a huge source of stress, as you can imagine, for the weeks and months leading up to it, of what was going to happen. It's a mandatory component of the course, so if I didn't do it, I wouldn't be able to qualify. But having had time to kind of reflect on it, it is another example of the disabled person in the situation having to get the consolation prize of an experience. I didn't get to go there and meet new people and go to all the in-person events and learn it in that way in the physical environment. I was in my room on a computer. And I mean, it ticked the box of the mandatory component and I got my qualification. But it is kind of sad that in 2023, we're not better equipped to give wheelchair users these experiences.
Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the academic procession.
I always give the disclaimer of, I am the first wheelchair user from Maynooth to qualify as a primary school teacher in Ireland. But after going through what I went through at the Gaeltacht, it became increasingly obvious that I am the first wheelchair user in Ireland to do this. It may seem surprising, because a lot of people are like, oh my God, I can't believe that. But I think once you've lived through the experience, it's no surprise that I am the first wheelchair user to do it. Because honestly, if I didn't have the supports around me that I did have, and if I didn't have that drive in myself, I suppose, to keep going, I probably would have dropped out a long time ago. Because it isn't a course that is built for people like me. It hasn't been built with a wheelchair user or any sort of physical disability in mind at all, whatsoever. And, you know, I think that's another reason why I'm so passionate about education and wanting to be that figure in a classroom. And I'm by no means saying that I'm a role model in saying that, but I think that had I had somebody in a wheelchair to look up to, you know, to say, if she did it, I can do it as a child, my internalised ableism and my relationship with my disability would have been much different at a much younger age. But it just wasn't there. There wasn't that representation. There was no figure of authority, so to speak, who was like me.
As I said, it's my pleasure to welcome you all to Maynooth. A special welcome to our graduates. So we're delighted to see them all.
I guess I have more confidence in myself now than I would have. Prior, I would have said, oh, everyone's just going to see the wheelchair and they're not going to get to know me at all as a person. But I'm comfortable enough in myself now to know that I have my own personality, I have my own things to bring to the table in conversation if I meet somebody, and if all they see is a wheelchair by the end of that and they don't get take anything else from who Lisa is, that's their problem. It was when I started talking about my disability and I met like-minded people and I became part of that community that I'd rejected for so much of my life, I slowly started to realise it wasn't such a negative thing and I slowly started to accept myself.
Professional Master of Education, Primary, Lisa Flynn.
Personally, looking at my role as a teacher and all the beautiful young minds that I educate, and they're the next generation, you know, they're the people now who are having their opinions and their ideas formed. And I would hope that by the time they're my age, that we'll live in a society that's much more open to discussion, that's much more open to change, that's much more open to being flexible towards different levels of ability. And if we can do away with the whole idea that disabled people are this other group that live on the other side of society, if we can do away with that and have a society that's accessible to everybody, then I'll be happy. Bit of work to do yet, but look, we've come on in leaps and bounds already, so what's another few leaps and bounds, you know? We'll get there. We will get there.